This is a HeadGum Podcast.
God, I love science and tea.
And STDs.
Well, those can, you know, we could have left those in.
I like them.
Yeah?
Maybe that makes me weird, but.
Unpopular opinion, the clap can stay.
It's time for Punch Up the Jam.
Punch
Up the Jam.
Punch
Up the Jam.
Punch
Up the Jam.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Welcome back to Punch Up the Fucking Jam. My name's Miel, and I am positively on one today. I don't know what's happened. I got my back adjusted right before I came in, and I think it released some spinal fluid into my brain that has the same effect as some kind of drug yet to be invented. I need to introduce you. I did forget how you want it to be credited, so I'm just going to wing it, and then you could tell me after, okay?
Oh, I didn't say.
Okay.
So whatever you want.
Okay, ready?
Yeah.
You know him as my friend.
That's all I wanted to be known as.
Super successful Patrick Walsh.
your friend, super successful Patrick Walsh.
What did you actually want me to mention?
No, that's
totally
fine.
You've done so much, I don't know where to begin.
Well, I met you on the Vine app.
Of course, but that's not maybe.
You were one of three people I found funny. Your other being your old partner.
Demi.
RIP. He
not
passed?
Dead. No, not dead, but, you know, emotionally.
Oh, okay.
He is not with us anymore.
Also, I'm a TV writer, showrunner.
Yeah, name your shows, though. You're selling yourself short here.
I started on Always Sunny.
Yes, thank you.
I worked for Two Broke Girls for many years, set right here in Williamsburg.
Yes, sir.
And I believe the most accurate and realistic portrayal of life in Williamsburg was Two Broke Girls.
Really?
I think
Champs Diner?
yes, I hear that a lot. And then I just ran the show called The Cool Kids for Charlie Day on the Fox Network.
That rolls so hard.
That's about it, you know?
Thank
working.
You. Thank you for doing that, my job for me.
Of course.
On
I
air.
Do my own podcast that was formerly on HeadGum.
Really?
Yes.
What's that about?
It is about movies, basically, but it's just me and my friend jerking around, you know?
Jerking.
It's this guy, Joe DeRosa, who's a very funny comedian friend of mine. We've done it for about 5 years. It's on Patreon. It's called We'll See You in Hell.
Oh, I love that it's on Patreon because Patreon actually makes you money. And if there's one thing I've learned about this world, it's that you need money.
You need money. You need money. I know your guy's boss, Amir.
Because, oh, I love Amir.
Yes, I do too.
Even though he has, in my opinion, questionable taste in music, he is a very good man.
I listened to his and I related so strongly to it because obviously Blues Traveler is a terrible band.
Yes. Objectively, I feel that is safe to say.
Yes. But when I was, and I feel like I'm about Amir's age, yeah. I was obsessed with that song. And then listening to that episode, I sided with him 100% of the time because I think it is a really clever commentary on pop songs and songwriting, in addition to being a catchy and good song.
I will say it came on. It's okay. So this podcast has kind of ruined my Made For You playlists on Spotify,
yes.
Of course, because it thinks that I actually want to listen to The Hook by Blues Traveler.
Right.
So it showed up on my playlist the other day. And as it started, I was like, oh, wait, what is this again? Oh, this isn't so bad. And the second he started singing, I was like, oh, no, it's okay. Thank you, Amir, for this.
Yeah. I mean, I hate harmonica. You know, I don't know why I like it, but it's a question I always ask with movies, too. My wife's like 5 years younger than me.
Uh-huh.
You're probably about 5+ years younger than me.
Probably about.
So you said you didn't know today's song, which is kind of
crazy. I really
don't. But like if I am watching a movie with her that I loved when I was a kid, I'll love it forever. If I saw it like when I was 10, I'm going to love it for my whole life. Same with music. However, if you're new and hearing something or seeing a movie today.
Yes.
It's probably just a completely drastically different experience.
We're literally about to find out because.
Yes.
I've only listened to the song enough to clip it for this episode.
Okay.
This song came out in originally 89. But it was
right.
A different version off the album Dusted. It sounded like this, which is like, okay, Rembrandt's REM, who are you?
Correct.
It's way faster.
Similar, but way faster, yes.
Kind of more like rock.
Yes, but a little punkier.
And then it was re-released in 92 on the album New Miserable Experience, and then released as a single in 93 when it finally did pop off.
Huge pop off.
What? How old were you? What was it like? Like, did you love it when it came out? Did you find it later?
I definitely wasn't like at age 8 buying the Dusted EP or whatever, you know. But when it hit the radio, I was like 12.
Uh-huh.
And Nirvana was big, but not on my radar. When you're 12, you're not that angry.
Speak for yourself.
Wasn't that angry. I got angry quickly and for the rest of my life. But I was very sad.
Yeah.
My whole childhood.
Okay.
So I always, even though I didn't really understand the emotions that adults would be singing about, I always like felt the pain.
Right. A bit of an empath at 12.
Exactly. Yes. So when that song came out, it was, you know, I wasn't ready for like, I wish I could eat your cancer when it turns black and all that kind of stuff.
I mean, yeah. Kurt had some things to say.
He did. I got into that more like age 17. And I probably heard Weird Al's Smells Like Nirvana before Smells Like Teen Spirit.
And then you became a comedy writer.
Yes. Uh-huh. And my parents were strict. So like even the cover with the kid's little dick, mm-hmm. that would have been a problem.
Really?
You know, like nudity. And it had the explicit lyric thing on it. And
right.
Blah,
and a song
blah.
Called Rape. Me.
That's correct. Yeah. Well, that was their, you know, later album.
Sorry. Again, I was three.
No, it's fine. You shouldn't know. And Walmart would not release In Utero because of the song Rape Me, which they called Hate Me, I think.
Okay.
They eventually released like a badly edited version of it.
3 Days Grace has something to say about that.
What is 3 Days Grace?
I hate everything about you. In a lot of ways, my generation's Nirvana.
Well, there. I thought you were doing Ugly Kid Joe from the Wayne's World soundtrack. And that song is, I hate everything about you. The exact same lyrics.
What?
And it was a huge hit.
Why is that so similar and yet so different in name? Ugly
I don't know.
Kid Joe and 3 Days Grace.
It's a good song, prominently featured in the film Wayne's World, the original.
But Gin Blossoms are neither of those bands. Gin Blossoms, like, what was the vibe? It was like, was this like a pop song, an angst song?
So, though I didn't like Nirvana and stuff, I loved cool music when I was a kid. I had a cool aunt.
Uh-huh.
My mom is lame as hell, but her sister is very cool. So she got me into like the Talking Heads and stuff. And I was telling you, I just saw David Byrne Friday night.
Yes, American Utopia.
It was one of the best shows I've ever seen in my life.
I'm dying to see it. Someone sponsor me.
I'm not going to.
Someone, I am looking at you. Someone sponsor me.
I used to roller skate in my basement when I was like 8.
What?
To the song Sugar on My Tongue by the Talking Heads, which is a very obscure Talking Heads song and very sexual. And I would listen to my cassette of the Talking Heads and roller skate alone.
Stop. This is okay. I'm so sorry to derail us so quickly. What
yes.
did you wear when you did this?
Booty shorts. No, I don't know what I wore.
Did you have a skate outfit?
Probably those little red shorts with like the white stripes up the side, you know?
Oh, and you're 8.
Not a skate outfit.
What did your skates look like?
Bad, cheap,
and
plastic.
And it was a concrete floor carpet.
Very concrete.
Oh, by yourself?
I had to skate around the sump pump. Which is like a weird sewage thing that like cheap houses had in those days. But yeah, by myself.
Oh, keep going. I'm sorry to cut you off.
So I liked cool music, but my parents would like, you know, I remember them throwing my sister's Alanis Morissette out. Would go down in a theater. That came out of the car and was like, no more. So they used to ban stuff all the time. I got my first CD player and I got the Pulp Fiction soundtrack, but I wasn't allowed to see Pulp Fiction. And you hit play and it's that woman going, any of you fucking pricks move and I'll execute every last motherfucking one of you. My mom and dad dove for the CD player and took it out. So they were very sheltering and yet didn't mind me having like erotic roller skate parties at age 8 by myself.
Roller skates in general, the most erotic of exercise.
Could not agree more.
Oof.
Could agree less. But I won't. So I was obsessed with the radio. That's all we had. And I loved the Hot 9 at 9. My local radio station had the Hot 9 at 9. Everything I do it for you by Brian Adams. From around the same period.
I bet your parents loved that song.
They did. And it ruled the Hot 9 at 9 for almost a year. Shoop, What a Man. This was the era that I was like a 10-year-old kid.
Okay, perfect.
So, Hey Jealousy really was my Nirvana. Like a lot of kids had that. You hear the riff of Smells Like Teen Spirit and you're like, holy shit. That my holy shit moment was probably gain on, ain't on, ain't. Yes. And I loved R.E.M. at the time and I thought it was an R.E.M. ripoff.
It's Losing My Religion, 100%.
Losing My Religion is dun, 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 dun.
I mean, I think they're even the same key.
However, and I'm glad you have the headphones on to keep your brain inside your skull. Hey Jealousy was written and recorded first.
What? Pat, I can't. You have to tone this down. You can't blow my mind this many times right at the beginning of the podcast.
I'm sorry.
I have nothing left.
I'm sorry.
Wow.
okay. So you're trying to say essentially that you had to make do with Gin Blossoms because you couldn't have Nirvana.
Not even couldn't have. It would have been too hard for me at that age.
The Roller Skating Sweetie.
Yes. I liked pop. I liked the Police, the Talking Heads and stuff, which were a generation before me.
Yeah.
But I liked them. In terms of like new music, I was listening to shitty pop like every other 10-year-old kid until Hey Jealousy, which for most people would be considered like also shitty pop. But for me, I was like, what is this?
Well, you're bringing up so many interesting things because I feel like you mentioned earlier, you're kind of like an empathetic kid.
Yes.
The lyrics to the song are extremely sad. Extremely sad. So even though maybe it sounds kind of poppy, this is not a happy tune.
Honestly, to this day, that remains probably my favorite subgenre of music is pop.
Music that sounds happy and
that
is
miserable, yes.
I'm so with you on that. Yes. Robin has my whole heart for
this
reason.
Absolutely.
Also interesting that you bring up Nirvana, because I don't want to harp on this too much. It's just devastating and I don't know where to go from here. But Doug Hopkins, who wrote this song, was fired from the band almost instantly after this song came out and made it big. And then shortly thereafter, killed himself.
They have
some parallels there.
They have one of the saddest stories there is.
Well, I also feel like an empathetic person. I can't imagine you can listen to a song like this and not just feel so deeply for him. Because, yes. I mean, this is kind of a cry for help.
It is. I mean, this kind of surface way to look at it is it's a guy who's begging his ex to take him back.
Right.
But he clearly has a very severe drinking problem. So I've read a lot about this guy, Doug Hopkins.
Yeah.
They were like the hottest band in Tempe, Arizona at the time. And he was well known, but it was for his like drunken antics. And he was always drunk. And he was a guy whose like hands would shake when he wouldn't drink.
I mean,
and that
the
kind
name
of
the band's Gin Blossoms.
Right. Which is the busted capillaries in your nose if you're like, wake up the next day after like a bender.
Right. Okay. I did not know that. Thank you.
It came from W.C. Fields. You know that old comedian?
Yeah.
So he'd always have these like busted blood vessels in his face from drinking.
Okay. And they were like that. You know what that looks like? If gin could blossom.
That I don't understand. Yes. But yeah, I told you like that's some sort of explanation. Yeah.
Sure. You know when capillaries break and you're like, God, if juniper had flowers,
yes,
that's
exactly
what it looked like.
Now, if I brought White Claws for the group and none of you drink, so I'm going to wake up with White Claw blossoms because
right,
I have to drink all four of these.
Which are just slightly more feminine in shape. I can't explain
yeah,
it.
Just me walking through the Berg, sipping on White Claws and listening to the Gin
Blossoms.
Lay
back.
Yes, with my mind on my White Claw.
My wife? I don't know what yes. it is. When it's White Claw, it's not your money.
That's true. That's true.
With my mind on my girlfriend and my girlfriend on my mind.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, it is super sad. They threw him out of the band for his drinking. The label was like, he can't stand up while he's playing.
He's a liability.
He had to get so drunk so his hands would stop shaking so he could play the guitar.
Oh God.
But he'd be too drunk to play.
Of course.
So they threw him out. The song becomes massive. It's on the radio every day. And now he's home letting his friends retire. And he needed money. So the label said to him, we owe you $15,000. If you sign away half of your royalties, will pay you the $15,000.
Oh my God.
That we already owe you.
Fuck them. That's and so not okay.
Well, it's a record label. They're all disgusting people. They're like TV networks. But they go, okay, he accepted this deal. He signed away half his publishing. The album sold 2 million plus copies, and them's $1993.
Right, which is approximately $70 million.
Yeah, exactly. And he signed it away. Was driven mad, as you can imagine, by hearing his songs on the radio that he was not a part of.
Right.
And he killed himself. The second album by the Gin Blossoms is the darkest title ever, if you know that story.
Which is
the
what?
The title is Congratulations, I'm Sorry.
Oh my God.
Which they said is like everybody was coming up to them saying, congratulations on your success and I'm sorry about Doug. But I took it as...
they're saying it to him.
You wanted us to apologize? Well, now we're doing it because you killed yourself.
Fucking Christ!
That's the end of the very sad story. Woo! We can focus on the song in a different manner now.
Yes, thank you. For
you're welcome.
You came in just knowing everything. I have two things to say. One is from my patron, Lindsay Jonas. I don't know why I
included... Her name is Jonas?
Her name is Jonas. Lindsay. She said she saw them in the summer of 2015, mm-hmm. which... I'm hard-pressed to imagine what that was like. But unsurprisingly, it was at the Milwaukee County Zoo for an event called Zoo a la Carte.
I saw them at St. Louis Rib Fest.
Is that real?
in like,
that sounds like such a fucking lie.
Like 2001, I saw them at Rib Fest with Soul Asylum.
Soul Asylum!
And I think the zoo was another step down.
So she, okay, wait, it gets better. She says, the event is very family friendly. It's called Zoo a la Carte, which I said. They're putting on a fairly decent show, but the lead singer, who I don't know who that is now, having a huge attitude. Clearly thinks they should be playing a better festival or venue than a zoo. I have questions on why you think that, but okay. There were some elderly people that literally waited for front row for a couple of hours prior to the concert.
Elderly?
Yes, and so of course they brought their own lawn chairs. They need to sit. They're elderly. And they're sitting, and the lead singer pretty much told them that they were being disrespectful for sitting for their show. Then he got really mad at the crowd for not knowing any of their most recent album, threw a fit about how the crowd only knew their hits. They were the rudest band I've ever seen. However, they did sound fabulous.
That breaks my heart. They were fun when I saw them at Ribfest.
You can't keep saying Ribfest.
And they did sound great. But I would imagine, their life has been very dark and... You know, they're touring with the Bare Naked Ladies.
Oh, friend of the show!
Friend of the show. And Toad the Wet Sprocket.
I don't remember Toad the Wet Sprocket, but I'm guessing based on title alone, that is a band from the early 90s as well.
Yes, they sang, they had a couple hits.
But it feels like Butthole Surfers. Like you could just get away with so much in the early 90s with titles.
Yeah.
That is all I had to say about the song. Thank you for humoring me.
Glycerine was the big, if dudes, like when I started to go to boy-girl parties, that was always the song that they would play on acoustic guitars.
That is so funny. It's very easy to play. Them as boy-girl parties.
I still refer to them as boy-girl parties.
I know exactly the type of song you're talking about. For me and my generation, it was Butterfly by Weezer.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you had way cooler friends than I did. I thought you were going to say Butterfly by Crazy Town.
Yeah, classically easy to play on guitar.
Right, right.
That sucks so bad.
That classic Shifty Shell Shock sound. Which was his name, by the way?
No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
The lead singer of Crazy Town was Shifty Shell
His name was Shifty Shell Shock, yeah.
You're going to have to come back and do
You're my butterfly, sugar, baby.
Which is, I feel like, the most Diane Tward lyric for not being Diane Tward.
Yes, that's right. That I get, yes.
Okay, let's start the song.
Okay.
It just starts right out a gate. It feels.
That's the thing. It's confident as hell.
It's like a racehorse.
Yes.
That little gate. And it was like, bow.
Yeah. It's like a gallop out of the gate. The riff is very simple, but super effective. It is Losing My Religion.
It is, unfortunately.
Beat him to the punch. And to me, that sound like I was in a band in, you know, college.
In the same basement? Oh, no. Fuck. Okay.
Different basement. But our demo that I paid $1,000 to record, 10 songs, whatever, sounds exactly like this. Like, this song sounds kind of shitty, which I love.
So that was going to be my second thought, was that the mix on this song, I hesitate to say bad.
Yes.
But if I may, bad.
It's a bad mix, but it's part of its charm, kind of.
I mean, it also, I feel like, is typical of this era. I think that, like... A lot of bands at this time were, I don't know if it was intentionally mixing this to have just the snare and the guitar right in there with the voice.
Yeah.
The bass just like noodling around. Everything's just like up at its maximum volume.
Yes.
Nothing's considered in terms of overall dynamics. It's like every man for himself.
Yes.
I understand emotionally. But then when the singer comes in and has like such a shaky timbre.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is a word I have learned how to pronounce throughout the course of this
timbre.
Podcast. It feels like a lot. It feels like, to me, this feels like a song that if it was a person and they came up to me at a party, I'd be like, ooh, gotta go. Like, I don't have time for your energy right now.
Yeah, it sort of seems like a guy approaching you and he can't stop talking about his ex.
Yeah.
You know, like, so you're like, hey, what's up? And he unloads on you about his ex and you're like, I don't even know who you are.
Right, you're like, oh, hey, Tim, that's awesome. So what do you do? And he's like, well, I did do graphic design and then that motherfucker, Jim. And you're like, yes. I don't.
Yes.
I think I need a refill on my water. Again, for sure. I do not drink.
For sure. You should. It's fun. But this guy drinks, and the lead singer, in the songs that aren't written by this guy, Doug Hopkins, his voice, you just want to slap him around. It's a pussy voice.
Okay, so you have to clarify, Doug Hopkins is singing this song.
Doug Hopkins doesn't sing.
So wait, this is a different singer.
He's the songwriter and he was the guitarist. The singer they brought on, all he does in concerts is like play tambourine. Huh. Which you can hear, and he's the guy who I guess yells at elderly people. But he does have a great voice, but it's wussy, you know?
So you're telling me that's not the voice is not the same person who wrote this?
Correct.
That is groundbreaking information to me.
Yes.
I am shaken by that. To me, there is a desperation I feel like is hard to fake. That is applauding. I am amazed.
I couldn't agree more.
Because also, like...
I always thought it was, too. I'm with you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Great song by Avril Lavigne. I feel like the lyrics, too, to start a song.
Yeah.
Tell me, do you think it'd be all right if I could just crash here tonight? How many times have you been asked that? And of those times, how many has worked out well?
That's exactly right. And how many times have you been excited to see that person? And like, it's always a mess of feelings. You're like, this is a horrible idea, but I kind of want you to, but it would be terrible. And I'm enabling you and whatever it might be.
Even if it's just a friend, I feel yes. that the specificity of that language usually means like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to want to stay for a few days.
That's the thing, because he, you know, the guy could come across almost as like a pioneering fuckboy.
Yeah.
However, he clearly hates himself so much and acknowledges his own faults so much.
It overshadows.
That I don't take that away from this song. Like, no. You would with like some of the other bands of this time period.
I am with you. Here we go. Are you ready?
Yes.
Oh, wait, actually, I forgot. I grabbed this off Genius because it tickled me so much. Can I tell you the annotation for this line?
Please.
He shows up at her place in the evening, but he's prepared for this. Like the ancient Spartans.
What?
He functionally burned the bridge behind him.
This is beautiful.
Set it up so she can't say no.
Who wrote that? That's beautiful.
I wish they were credited.
I'm going to give him a writing job. That's incredible.
Like the ancient Spartans?
Yeah.
He functionally burned the bridge behind him.
Yes.
What a deep cut of history.
This is Sparta.
This is fucking Sparta. Let's go on.
Yes. You can see I'm in no shape for driving. And anyway, I've got no place to go. Look, I need to pause there. It just gets better.
Okay, so your ex shows up at your house.
Yes.
Visibly drunk. Hey, you know, do you think it'd be okay if I crash here tonight?
Yes.
I can't drive. I've driven there drunk.
Yes. So that's the implication. He drove there drunk.
But I cannot drive again. You wouldn't make me drunk drive, would you?
Right.
Plus, even if you did, I got nowhere to go.
Exactly.
I am homeless, and it is somehow your problem.
That is four lines that really paint an amazing picture. A bad picture.
I'm getting flashbacks of all of my bad exes.
Yeah, of course.
Instantly.
So I'm too drunk to drive, but I also have nowhere to go. Yeah, could be homeless, who knows? But it's also like, it's a threat almost, because it's like, I'll just be driving the streets aimlessly drunk.
It'll be your fault.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know where I might go is to hit a family of four walking through a crosswalk, unless I stay here.
I might look up on the app families of four going through crosswalks, find out where they are,
yes,
drop
exactly.
a pin.
Yeah, so I guess I do have somewhere to go, and it's to that crosswalk.
And do you know how hard it is to find families of four going through crosswalks at 2 in the morning?
At this time of night, exactly.
I am reminded so deeply, hope he doesn't listen, sorry if he does, of a boy I dated right after high school who... What it should have been a red flag. He was actively living in like a family's home at that time that had
okay.
kind of taken him in. He did have a home, like a family. I don't think he just like wanted to go there. It was unclear. I didn't ask. But
right.
within literally 2 weeks of dating, he quietly was just spending every night in my yurt.
Your yurt?
I lived in a yurt at the time.
Okay. All right.
And actually,
you can't just casually say my yurt though.
I think like
you know that.
I do, but I also, like, what am I supposed to do? Backstory, I lived in a yurt.
Sure. Like, is that, like, podcast lore? Everyone knows you lived in a yurt?
If it's not, I feel like at this point everyone gets that from me,
sure.
that I am the
get
type.
Get that vibe, yeah.
Absolutely. Are you yes. kidding? Fucking look at me.
Sure. You have a yurt vibe.
I have a major yurt vibe.
Yes. All right. Carry on.
He never left my yurt. He stayed in my yurt. And do you know what? We broke up when we were, what, 18?
Yeah.
He came back and lived and said, you're at, like, 30.
So he might still be in the yurt.
For all we know, he's still in the yurt.
Wow, but he won't hear this.
The moral of the story is set boundaries hard and early.
And that's the moral of the song as well.
It is. Let's continue listening to it. It, you know, might not be that bad. I'm sorry, I had to pause there too.
Of course.
What a sell!
That's how he's selling himself. That's why I think this guy gets that he's pathetic. You know, a lot of these songs are from the point of view of a wounded guy who's 100% sure that he's right and the girl is wrong. Most songs from this era are, actually.
Yeah, very misogynistic, pompous.
Right. And when I heard them, I used to kind of pump my fist and be like, yeah. And then you learn, you know, through growing up that you're often the
wrong one. You're the bad guy.
Yes. Even Weezer, who's one of my favorites of this time period, their songs are pretty rough at this point.
Objectively bad, yes.
So, like, he's saying, it might not be that bad.
Implying, I'm assuming that they will have sex on this night.
Oh, I didn't take that from it.
I mean, if you're going to your ex's house and saying, hey, can I crash here?
No, you're right.
There's something.
But I figured he was too drunk to do it. And he's saying,
if he's this drunk all the time, yes, he probably knows how to, I don't know, popsicle stick, something.
A splint. Yeah, no, I think I always took it as he's trying to get the relationship back and not a booty call. Okay. That's how I always took the song.
Either way,
yes,
the sell is it might not be that bad.
And that's not a good sell.
I mean, maybe to somebody who like craves the most self-deprecating man in the world, they would love that. Right. I have yet to meet someone who is like that.
I used to think when I was 14, let's say, that girls did like self-deprecation, and they don't. They might like a touch of it, but I used to think that was like how I was going to, you know, make my way in the world.
So you were like, I have to work on hating myself more than anyone's ever hated themselves. So your Rocky montage was just like,
that.
Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I just like, I thought that kind of sad sack thing was going to be my selling point. Because I could always make people laugh about it. But you learn then that no one wants to be with that person.
Well, you're also really, like, what are you laughing at?
Myself.
You, right. That's punching
and
down.
Making myself into a joke.
Yeah.
Right. I learned that, by the way, like post-college.
Oh, yeah.
It took a long time.
I think in a lot of ways, I'm still learning that.
Well.
What? Are you talking? You were the best I ever had. The guitars are like, yeah, all right, everybody, get your cocktails, tip your waitress. And then he's like, if I hadn't blown the whole thing years ago, I might not be alone.
Rough.
These are two different songs happening here.
That's correct.
And also, do you sense like a tinge of the lighthouse in here? Like, this is
lighthouse?
Willem. I wish. Lighthouse, the Willem Dafoe.
Oh, I thought you meant Hanging by a Moment.
Oh, that's a song I want to talk about. No, Willem Dafoe.
Yeah, I saw
the
it.
Accent in the lighthouse.
Oh, I didn't, but
if
now I did.
I hadn't blown the whole thing years ago. There's something about you shouldn't have spilled your beans.
Yeah, like, no, I agree.
In this
song should have been called "I Shouldn't Have Spilled My Beans." Hey, I shouldn't have spilled my beans.
Maybe that's the punch up.
I think the man's voice is beautiful.
It is, but when you sing these words,
you're adding
words,
a pirate tinge to it that isn't there.
Listen one more time. It might not be
yeah, you're
alone.
Right. You're right.
There's something old-timey about it.
Sure, I hear you.
And also, what he's saying, you were the best I ever had.
Now, do you take that as sexually or as a partner, as a romantic partner?
I mean, I think it's first, like, obviously sex, and then secondly, obviously love.
Correct. You
can't really separate them when it's this desperate.
And here's to even make that dark line a little darker. You get the feeling that maybe the only good one he's ever had.
I get the sense that he has never been with anyone else.
That could be too, which is somehow sadder than my sad down.
And if I hadn't blown the whole thing.
Right. So he blew the whole thing, and then
from cheating and drinking, do we know?
Well, honestly, what is the chorus of the song?
Well,
hey, jealousy. Why does he say that? I think that was probably a huge part of what led to the breakup.
Do you think from him or from her?
From him. He goes drunk and jealous, and she talked to a guy, and he'd pop off the handle.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to unpack.
It's so positive suddenly musically.
Tomorrow we can drive around this town and let the cops chase us around. That, if all you are is a chorus person, which I think most dumb people are.
And we mostly are dumb.
You're waiting for the chorus.
I like that part and that line.
I think it's fantastic.
There's a little white privilege in there. A lot of white privilege in there.
Yes. But you hear that, if you're just like jamming to the chorus, you're like, yeah, me and my girl driving around. And that's what people miss about the song is all the darkness. So he's saying that's the fun day he has planned for tomorrow.
If you wake up.
Outrunning the cops. But also to go deeper with it, he's saying to her, if you take me back, we can get our old life back, which is full of drama and all this stuff that he thrives on. But I guarantee at this point in her life, she does not.
Well, he does follow it up with the past is gone, but something might be found to take its place.
Something
might be found. So I think even he's aware.
Yes.
What happened is over, but maybe it will be different this time.
Yes. But
maybe if enough cops chase us around.
I think writing this song, he knows things are not going to be different. And she probably knows.
Well, I mean, he knows she's not going to say yes to any of this.
Correct.
And still he goes on a monologue.
Yes.
Which in a way, all songs are.
Yes. But then why does he say, hey, jealousy? And I have two friends back in Missouri who, when this song was popular, thought that the girl's name was Jealousy.
Jealousy?
No, Jealousy. Which is crazy.
That is crazy. Yeah. Imagine being like, this is my daughter, Brooklyn, and this is my son, Jealousy.
I bet there's a Jealousy out here in Williamsburg. Jealousy Jones or something.
Rumor has it, if you scream from the HeadGum balcony, one will come, and she will hex you.
I'm doing a pilot with Parker Posey as Jealousy Jones.
Hey, Jealousy! Hey, Jealousy! Hey, Jealousy! Hey,
this is the theme song, yeah. It's me and the Gilmore Girls lady are doing it.
You don't know her name?
I've done the Gilmore Guys podcast. Her name is...
You're getting it.
Amy Sherman Palladino.
Yes.
And her husband, Bill Sherman Palladino.
No, she doesn't have a husband. She is married to a hat.
Oh, that's true. Yes. Okay.
I can't believe you don't know that. You're a TV writer.
Hey, Jealousy. Hey, Jealousy. I'll be there for you.
Also after the song.
The Rembrandts were after?
Oh, yeah.
What? It's so...
This was the first song I ever written, and that it doesn't get credit for that. It doesn't get enough credit for that.
Famously the first
Gershwin
song
Gershwin, heavily influenced by this song.
Mm-hmm. You know who I heard had a ghostwrite on this? Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ. Holy Jesus Christ.
It actually was, hey, Judas-y.
All right. Take it easy, Mia. Take it easy.
I also just learned about Judaism. Patrick, you asked me off air how I feel about this song now so far after first chorus.
Yes.
Where I'm at being a non-nostalgic listener. I feel like the verses don't do a lot for me.
Okay.
The chorus has a little something there, but for me to like it would need it to just sound very different. I do not like what's happening in the band here. This sounds like a garage band to me, which is fine if I'm at like a house show. But when I'm like actively listening to music in my nice headphones and it sounds objectively bad, I don't particularly enjoy that.
Right.
I'm one of those people who kind of can't get over it.
But in listening to this podcast, I find you to be much more musically knowledgeable than your average person in terms of
thank you
the quality of music and like what notes, chords, etc.
I think this is really beautifully written. I will say that.
Yes.
I think that if this was a different recording and perhaps a different performance, I could really see this being a beautiful song.
Yes.
Like I would love to hear a really nice stripped down cover of this because I think it would have a totally different impact.
Right.
I think the writing's
there. Well, I'm sure there'll be a movie trailer soon that'll have some
tomorrow
creepy ghost girl singing "Hey, Jealousy" slowly.
Bling.
Exactly. Well, that. It bums me out, but
I'm sorry.
Because I just think it's a perfect song.
I do really wonder how much, especially with songs of this era, has to do with the nostalgia factor.
I think a lot.
Because like I can still really fuck with. Actually, I'll use it as an unpunchable jam. But there are certain songs from the same general era that don't sonically sound that great.
Yes.
That I can get down on.
Right.
I think it's the coupling of the vocal performance and the mix being terrible. And the song just being pretty sad, which I have a hard time overlooking knowing what happened to this man.
I get that. What do you think about like Dookie, an album that came out like the year after this? Is that produced in the same way or no?
I mean, it also sounds like shit, but I love punk.
Sure.
So I
love that album, of course.
Love Green Day.
Yeah, so do I.
So I can't separate my nostalgia from that.
Sure, of course. But like Weezer, produced by the recently deceased Rick Ocasek of The Cars, mm-hmm. which was the most immaculately produced rock band of all time. He produced the Blue album, and it sounds incredible. It came out in 1994. Do you agree that that is an amazingly produced album?
I've never paid attention to the production on that album, if I'm okay. honest. I never have listened to it critically because I'd have never said this before publicly. I strongly dislike Weezer.
Oh. Okay. Boy, you really made me think I was like, this is going to get real uncomfortable.
I've never said this before. I'm racist.
Yeah.
It turns out.
You've never said it, but your actions scream it. Frankly. You can trust me not to think. Drink. And not to sleep around. If you don't expect too much from me, you might not really down. There it is. There it is.
Any therapist listening to this right now who has not previously heard this song is just to get hit yes. the jackpot in Vegas.
I do feel I'm obviously much better off than this gentleman, but I do feel sometimes like I am saying some version of that to my wife when we have an argument. If you stop expecting so much from me, you won't be let down. I'm pretty good.
Keep the expectations super low.
You want me to be excellent, and that's not going to happen.
I can give you mediocre at best.
Right. I think, you know, like that's a guy thought. I think women, and I'm being stereotypical, but, you know, largely this is true.
Sure. Generalizing is great.
Want guys to open up more, to be more, affectionate. And it's hard. I know I'm doing like a Paul Reiser bit now.
Keep going.
But like that's in my marriage, that is very much true. I think she wants better communication, me being more open. And that's what this line is to me. If you don't expect too much from me, you might not be let down. His bar is way lower than mine, this guy. He just showed up drunk.
I promise I will not think and I will not cheat.
Yes.
And that is where the expectations have to end.
Right. Well, it's a way better and funnier song if he says, you can trust me not to drink, because he showed up drunk.
No, I think it's a way funnier and better song if he says, think.
Think. I'm not going to think for myself,
basically.
He says, you
can trust me not to think.
Yeah, that's good. That is good.
As if that's what she's asking for.
Yes.
You think too much.
Right.
And I would love it if you were a hair dumber.
Yes.
Maybe a whole head of hair dumber. I'd love it if you were just a dumb as a fucking rock.
Yeah. He thinks that's what she wants, yes.
Dumb as a rock and loyal.
Yes.
That's all I'm looking for in a man.
Right.
I would add to your comment, too. Of course, what you're saying is very general. It cannot be.
Of course.
It's not categorically true. I think that also could be generational. I think Gen Z.
You're right.
Think those men are doing great with their communication.
From what I have observed,
I think that this kind of toxic masculinity that plays so deeply into men not having any tools to express their emotions.
Right.
Unfortunately, you got fucked by that. And now you are an adult man who has been conditioned by that.
An awful role model that I'm not going to go into unless I want to get on this couch and switch places with you. But I also think it's locationally.
Yes.
I'm from Missouri, but all of my friends are like this.
Yep.
And I think they're going to raise their kids like that. They're not emotional, affectionate, demonstrative.
That's a great people. Point. I am speaking from the coastal bubbles here.
Yes.
100%. And if we
you lived in a goddamn yurt. We had different grow-ups.
We literally had family meetings in my house where everyone had a space, I'm not kidding, to get something off their chest. Everyone in our family.
Honestly, and I'm not blowing smoke, Mia, that is probably why you were such a delightful, awesome person. Honestly. Like, you were encouraged to explore, like, your interests and, like...
But it's isolated me so much so in my relationships with men because there is an emotional intelligence moment where I have to be like, okay, I can't do your work for you.
Yep.
If you can't see why you're acting this way because clearly you feel this way.
Yes.
You have to go to a fucking therapist and figure that out, sir.
Correct.
Not on me to teach you that. And frankly, it'll exhaust me and make me resent you. So have fun on your journey, but recognize that it's fucking your journey and not mine.
That's amazingly helpful. And I'm sure guys resent you for even saying that to them. I go to therapy. It is incredibly painful and miserable. Like, I wake up and dread it.
That's
but
how you
I
know
go.
It's working.
I know it's working. But I go. I would say 50% of my friends back home would laugh hard if therapy was suggested to them. And they all need it.
I fucking hate that. It's 2020, really? Like, you have one life and you're proud to be miserable for the whole fucking thing?
Correct.
Disgusting. Well, I also want to add to the gender thing, too. The keeping the expectations low thing. I don't know if that's a gender thing, because I certainly have that. Oh my God. One time in therapy, I'm not kidding, this was said. I was talking to her and I was more speaking about my expectations of how I want to go through my own life.
Right.
But that is off projecting of how I feel about myself.
Yeah.
And we're talking about, I was like, I just imagine that it's like a pit And I've just fallen from the top to the bottom so many times that I think I'm going to like set up a bodega here and hang out down here. And she was like,
in the pit.
Yeah. And I was saying this like happily, like, yeah, you get it. And right, she was like, do you understand that what you're saying is you live in a pit?
and aim to continue living in a pit.
I've decided there's no hope for me outside of the pit. So I'm right, just like, that's cool. I'm going to commodify this space. I'm going to colonize this space. Yes. Make it my home. It'll be fine. Yeah, it's dark.
That's rough.
And yeah, then you hear lyrics like this and you're just like, oh, I guess I've come kind of far. Because I recognize sure, that's fucked up.
You wouldn't let this guy in, I hope.
I wouldn't speak to this man.
Yeah, good.
Sadly, not my job. I'm too empathetic. I will make you my problem. Okay, let's keep going.
Yeah, it just gets, we're getting into that pit.
It's just so dark. His pit is so much deeper than mine.
And, you know, I really, like, this was a time when lyrics were buried or usually nonsense if they were on the more rock Nirvana Soundgarden side. Right. Like, a 13-year-old would be like, what the hell is this song about?
Well, and even then, like, how many people really pay attention to lyrics, but yes, especially lyrics in the verse?
Correct.
You can hide a lot.
This song, the lyrics just come through crystal clear. Like, you can't really... there's no real interpreting unless you want to decide how dark you want to read them.
Yeah. So when he says he blew the whole thing years ago, what do we think that, like, did he, like, he kill somebody?
This is the second time he's mentioned having blown the whole thing years ago.
I think, okay, my read is that he cheated. And I think that's why he's saying, hey, jealousy. I think he in that moment is like having an aside being like, that doesn't really fucking hold up at all. But you know that he's like,
well, she wouldn't be jealous of him cheating.
No.
And I think he's putting it all on himself.
So it has to be him then.
Yeah.
It has to be him saying, but then again, I'm so thrown by him promising not to sleep around. That is not something that not cheaters say.
That's true. But by the way, he might have been a drunk cheating asshole, but that made him more jealous because those guys
projecting
exist too. Projecting
they
and they
do.
Think.
The yes, most jealous guys cheat. Are you kidding?
Correct.
I mean, again, generalizations, but categorically true.
Correct. Yes.
And also, such a red flag. Again, I'm hoping listeners know that if someone says, all I really want is to be with you, that's a fucking big red flag.
All I really want is to be with you. This is a guy who's trying to become a professional musician also. All I really want is to be with you, feeling like I matter too.
So what I'm getting from that is that you don't feel like you matter unless you're with me specifically.
That's correct. Very codependent.
And also so much pressure on a single person.
Yes.
And he's singing it, I'm assuming, from the perspective of, like, this is a love song.
Yes, although I think...
He knew.
He knows that this song bad, could be called, Hey Jealousy, parentheses, Red Flags.
So this is, like... So he, when he started, he was like, okay, he drove her to her house drunk, and he was like, okay, yeah, no, I'm gonna fucking... Tonight's tonight. It's been years.
Yes.
Literally years, but I am in the best headspace right now at 2 a.m. drunk
right,
to win her over. And yep, I'm gonna, oof, okay, thinking up a speech on the drive, avoiding children and their families in crosswalks, pulls up and walks in. He's like, woo, gets one sentence in and does that thing where you're like bombing a set and you panic and uh-huh, you just double down on bombing even harder.
Yep.
Every subsequent line in the song, he's like, you know what, then just fuck it. Let's just go for it. Oh, I'm fucking, all I really want is to be with you, and I because that's all I feel like I matter too when I'm with you, and then he's just repeating himself.
I think that's exactly what happened,
right? And then they were like, all of it stays in.
Yeah.
And then they were like, put it to tape.
Yeah. Well, he has also said that he barely remembers writing the song.
It feels stream of consciousness.
It does, but it also holds together and makes sense. So I think, like, do you think he, and this is, keep in mind, 92 or 89 when it was written,
I was born, thank you.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Do you think he pulled over and did a couple calls from a payphone before he headed over, or just a cold knock on the door?
Brave of you to assume he has quarters.
That's true. That's true.
I do not know. Maybe called collect, maybe.
You think he even still knew the number? Let's be real.
I mean, yes. In this time, we all...
In this time, we knew the
somehow number. Our brains were better developed to memorize numbers.
That's true.
Because now, can't even do one.
Did you ever have a wall rotary phone?
Of course.
Okay.
I'm not that young.
Did you know that my parents made me answer the phone, hello, Walsh residents, Patrick speaking?
Okay. Of all the things you've said about them, that is objectively the most fucked up.
Isn't that nuts?
And you're like, how old, 5?
No, until I left the house.
Oh, no.
So my friends
hello,
would be like,
Walsh residents. It's my, Patrick speaking.
My friend's just
You're
really
17.
Unleashed on that. Believe
it's
like, me.
Hey, man, it's Craig. What the fuck did you just say?
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing. That was somebody else here.
Imagine your crush like working up the nerve to call you and hearing you answer the phone like that and then immediately losing their crush on you.
I'll bet it happened. Oh, I'm going to tell myself that that's what happened and that's why I didn't have a date for most of high school.
In my mind, they also made you call yourself Patty.
Yes, exactly. Peppermint Patty.
I'm really sorry, Patrick.
It's not your
that's
fault.
That's devastating.
It's not your fault.
That alone took you halfway down the pit.
Well, at least you'll be there to hang out with in the pit.
Oh, I sell chips and sodas in the pit.
Beautiful. I'll take a pit chip.
That is like a metaphor for my life, though. Eating chips in the pit. Please don't steal that. That's my new pilot.
You don't Wait, seem you like you're
that?
In a pit.
Can you make that for me?
Can I make pit chips?
The show, I got to make it.
Sure.
The girl who doesn't seem like she's in the pit, but she is.
Write it and send it over.
Thank you.
I'll hire you and the person who wrote the Rap Genius summary of Hey Jealousy.
Okay, he goes on to say. The good part.
And you're hearing that tambo hitting hard.
I wish that was the whole song. I do. I like that part so much better.
It's great.
That feels like a brief respite from the hell the rest of the song is, both musically and lyrically.
I'm excited to get to the end, which I've never been able to figure out, and hopefully we can crack it.
I hope the version I grabbed has it. Well, I probably.
It has the end.
I don't know. Okay, now we get into the guitar solo.
Which is not great.
But it was, unfortunately, a requirement of every song of this era.
Absolutely.
A very subpar, totally mediocre guitar solo that takes up 30 seconds because they couldn't be bothered to write a bridge.
There was a point from their third album on, basically, where Weezer decided every guitar solo would follow the melody of the verse note for note. They became so fucking boring.
Yes.
I know you hate them anyway, as you told me.
Rivers, I'm sorry.
But yeah, like this guitar solo is, they could have done another take. Let's put it. Bluntly.
Let's find out.
It's okay. They lose the footing a little there. Now it's getting better.
I'm so stroked. I'm so stroked by how he went down. He was like, let me start it up here and then take you way downtown. I was like, that's not typically where solos go.
No.
Let me just hang out down here for a bit. Bring you down right into the River Styx.
They're not virtuosos. They have very simple riffs, chords.
You don't think they're virtuosos? Because when I've heard people talk about gin blossoms, that's usually the word I hear. Super depressing, super sad, one-hit wonder, virtuosos.
Excuse me.
Two-hit wonder, sorry.
Five-hit wonder.
Five-hit wonder, of course. And then I have simply 35 seconds of a section I have titled Long Chorus, which I'm excited about because, again, this is the part of the song I like.
Let it wash over you. Little breakdown. Hey, jealousy. Now we do it again. Well, tell me, do you think it'd be all this song's right? Under three, right?
Okay. You see, I'm no sheep for driving.
Anyway, I got no place to go. Takes it up there.
He's like, listen, don't pay attention to what I'm saying.
Yes.
Just listen to the way I'm singing it. Nga.
It doesn't matter what I say as long as I sing with inflection. That's hook.
Don't you dare quote Blues Traveler at me ever fucking again. I will ruin you in this
John
town, Patrick.
Popper, comma, Blues Traveler.
I don't know that I've ever heard someone so gleefully sing about homelessness.
Yeah, exactly.
I meant to mention earlier, too, when he sings about the cops chasing us around.
Yes.
This is a tangent I probably shouldn't say, but fuck it, I'm gonna. Are you ready? I feel like I'm absorbing the White Claw energy you have brought into the studio.
Sure.
We had nothing to do on the island ever, but especially it was hard on weekends.
Yes.
You're a teenager. You want to just like go to the mall or literally anywhere and there's nothing to do.
Well, you're making a coconut phone.
Right. Right. So one summer in particular, we became very fond of going to the grocery market parking lot, which was kind of the only like vacant space, I guess, that we could go.
Okay.
And like opening all the car doors of someone's car and just like having a dance party basically outside of the car.
Ooh, boy.
It's like six of us, by the way.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So on one such night, we're doing this playlist, Heartbeats by The Knife.
Great song.
Like a Prayer, Madonna. We're just going fully in it.
Yes.
And the cop, whoop, whoops, pulls up. And we're like, oh, is this illegal? We're sober, by the way.
It's not.
Stone fucking sober.
Right.
I think I was even straight edge at the time. We don't need to talk about it.
Cop pulls straight up. Edge?
What?
Meaning you don't even think about drinking?
Straight edge is like a whole movement. You don't know about straight edge?
I thought it was no drinking, no drugs.
It's like firmly anti-drinking drugs.
Meaning like, you hate other people who do it?
Kind of, usually. I mean, technically, no. It's just like, I don't do it. But there usually is a lot of animosity about the culture of drinking. That's why you're like, I need a title to show how different I am.
I was just thrown by you saying I didn't drink and I was straight edge. I didn't know what the difference was.
Not only did I not drink, I fucking hated drinking.
I understand.
So when the cops pulled up, I was like, here we go. I can't get arrested again.
Right.
And they shine the light on us and they like get out their megaphone and they're like, what are you guys doing? And we were like, okay, sorry. And then he's like, turn it up.
Oh shit.
And he jumps out of the car.
Hat comes off.
Fucking dances to Madonna for like 5 minutes.
Did this really happen or was it like a Jason Schwartzman 1996 movie?
Jason Schwartzman has stolen every fucking idea from my life. It sounds like Records was my idea.
That's cool.
It was sick.
How long did the cop dance with you?
For all of Like a Prayer.
Okay.
And then he like asked what the next song was, and I think it was like that Paul Simon song, I Know What I Know. Whoo, whoo, whoo.
Yeah, I know it.
Yeah. You know
I said,
what you know?
Don't I know you from the cinematographer's party? Yeah. Yes.
And then he didn't
That's
like
Paul
that
Paul Simon
vibe.
Not realizing that like maybe everyone hearing the song might not go to cinematographer's parties. That's how isolated he was at that point. Also, you should do a podcast about how he ripped off African nations for that album.
Yes, he sure fucking did.
And Los Lobos. He would bring in people to consult, steal their songs, and give them no credit.
I have to be careful what I say about him on this podcast because we do have a shared friend, but yes.
You have a shared friend? You're friends with Art Garfunkel?
I cannot confirm nor deny this statement.
Who was your friend?
Look at my vibe.
I can say he's a short, bald prick.
The last clip.
Now pay attention to these last lines because these are the two I don't understand.
Okay.
Now.
Wow.
Yeah. This is also how every 90s song ends. Of course. They all jump 6 inches in the air and land on the goon.
You know, they did every ending option
all
together.
Let's do them all.
They were like, let's do the abrupt slowdown.
Yes.
And then let's also do the like feedback linger. And then let's also do the big and brow.
Yes.
And then let's also have feedback on that.
Yes. And it's a much more effective song if it just ends abruptly because it would leave you like with your car pulled over wondering what just happened.
Sobbing into your hands remembering Chelsea.
Right. So maybe they did that to soften it or something. But the last two lines are, hey,
she
Jealousy, of course.
She took my heart.
She took my heart or you took my heart. She took my heart. But there's only one thing I couldn't start.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
First thought, best thought is his penis.
She took my heart... Yeah, I mean, that's...
You said he's a drunk. That's the first thing I thought
that's
of.
True. So you know how song meanings, you ever been to that website?
Literally all the time. This fucking website?
I'm sure, yes.
Song meanings? I should be sponsored by song meanings.
Okay. I love it. I've gotten like fascinating new takes on songs from it. But I read 100 people and everyone that discussed this ending seemed wrong to me.
Huh.
So they were saying it was his car. So what I saw the most was that he is practicing all this stuff he's going to say to her, but he couldn't start his car. And I'm like,
what? That's
well, you're
a
making
reach.
That up.
That's
I mean,
such a reach.
Yes.
I thought you were going to say he like deliberately sabotaged his own car so he literally could not leave her house.
That would be a smart guy, but no. I don't think...
Wait,
I think
I'm sorry,
he said
can we just revisit that? You just said that'd be a smart guy. That's fucking... I said the same thing, and you were like, intelligent move.
Well, it would be smart because he wouldn't mess up his life. He wouldn't be driving drunk. That's why they put breathalyzers in cars.
Right, yes, correct.
But what do you think it means? What's the one thing he couldn't start? I don't buy that it's his penis.
I mean, I get
I don't
the
buy
sense,
that it's his car.
It's not. I get the sense that this song... I want to give the songwriter credit because I think even though this is very bleak and sad
yeah.
and self-deprecating, it is so authentic.
Yes.
No part of me doubts that he had this exact experience and that he maybe even said these exact words.
Yes.
And that's really hard as a songwriter not to get in your own way and want to like polish and judge things, you know? But he really just cuts straight to the core of it. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's a real person that this really happened with and that that last line is... a very specific nod to something
thing.
That only she knows.
Right.
That's my read on it.
Yeah.
Or he's wiener. He's drunk.
It leaves you with this because the rest of it is so clear
mm-hmm.
and so easily understandable. And even like if you're looking back at your whole dark life, relatable.
That's my
Parts
second
pilot.
Parts
of it are relatable.
That's my second pilot.
My whole dark life with Claire Danes. But I don't know what that last line is and I never have.
And you never will.
And I never will. And maybe that's the power of the song.
Hey, Jealousy. That you'll never know it.
And how do you take Hey, Jealousy? How important do you think jealousy is to the song? It's the title.
It's just a weird word he repeats. It has no bearing on the rest of the song to me.
Right.
I don't know why it's the title or the chorus. I mean, it is definitely the most like, I don't know. To me, the best part of the song, tomorrow we can drive around yeah. this town. I keep wishing the second half of that would do something different.
Right.
It keeps sliding into this just like, what's the word? Insufferable place?
Yeah. Well, he was very depressed.
Yeah, but like there's a specific type of insufferable outside of depression that's just like, like the kind of person you're like, ooh, what do you want for dinner? And they're like, I don't really care. And you're like, okay, well, there's this awesome Italian place. And they're like, I don't want Italian. Like that's how it feels.
Yes.
The second half of the chorus.
That's an annoying person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Hey Jealousy part like fits into that category for me.
Right.
Which it rubs me the wrong way because he comes from such a nice place. Tomorrow we can drive around this town.
Yes.
Which is like, who is that? That's somebody.
Yeah.
That's a melody from like Third Eye Blind or like, it's like exactly early 90s rock. It sounds like so like even a little bit Blink-182. Like there's mm-hmm. something happening melodically there that reminds me of another fucking song. It's driving me insane.
Well, again, both those bands came after the GBs.
The GB set the precedent.
Damn and Jesus.
So before I ask you how to punch it up, I'm really interested. I have not listened to this yet. Let's hear what Rob Moose has to say. He is now my musician in residence who I make listen to all of these songs
oh,
and
okay,
give me
great.
The musical analysis.
Great.
Today's song is about jealousy. And I thought it might be interesting to talk about honesty from a musical perspective. I love revisiting these 90s recordings that I kind of cherished in my youth because they are so transparent in certain ways. For instance, you can hear the guitarists kick on distortion pedals when they hit the pre-chorus section, as opposed to layering in a new part as an overdub. I think it serves to reinforce that the goal for a band like this was to document their live show. They would have spent a lot of time talking about the parts and the tones and how best to capture them, but once they got to that point, they would just cycle the song over and over again until they got a take they liked. Speaking of cycles, a lot of this song is the same chord progression over and over and over again. D, E, F sharp minor, E. So those tonal shifts in the guitar actually help to demarcate a new section in a helpful way. There is one major chordal shift, which is for the chorus, thank God. They go up to A major, which is actually the tonic of this song. It's a nice sentiment. We're in the chorus. We're in the home key. And our friend the bass player, speaking of transparency, brings back his idea from the intro in which he plays a four-note lead-in to the first chord. That's him in the intro. And there he is again into the chorus. The reason I'm pointing this out is that I want you to remember this little bass part for the end of the song because it plays a very interesting and funny role. Before we get to that, though, you know I have to talk about this guitar solo. I feel like there was a musicians' union for guitarists that was as strong as the NRA because these guys were getting crazy amounts of real estate. I mean, that's fully 25 seconds of time for this man to noodle all over these chords. Does he have a motivation? Is he seeking to embody some aspect of the song? I don't really think so. I think the band just thought, let's set this dude loose and maybe we won't have to write a bridge. To circle back to our theme, the guitar solo is actually one of the very rare moments in which there is an overdub. You can tell that guitar just kind of emerges from nowhere, the panning is slightly different, the tone is different, and the rhythm guitar part in that channel drops out. I can't help but get all sports center about this. Why take out the rhythm guitar part there? It makes the start of the guitar solo feel so hollow. It doesn't feel like an arrival, it feels like an awkward reset. Speaking of awkward, let's talk about the end of this song. Now, I'm not a bass player, but I understand that there is sometimes a lack of glory in the low end, and this poor chap has been just doing his job for 3 or 4 minutes, and all of a sudden he realizes there's an opportunity to reassert his thematic idea. So he goes, boo-doo-doo-doo. Unfortunately, he and the drummer haven't really rehearsed this, and from the second of those 4 eighth notes, we are no longer together at all. He missed the last note of the whole song, and they left it in. Talk about transparency.
That was great. Who is this person?
Oh, it's Rob Moose. He's the co-founder of this incredible classical group, Y Music. He plays with, like, Phoebe Bridgers and Bon Iver and The National. Like, he's a very legitimate musician.
Tell him I loved that. I would have listened to that for an hour.
He should have a podcast, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That was so...
And he's right. Like, when somebody points out the flaws of, like, something you truly love and you can't argue with them, that's a good argument.
I just love to hear such, like, an accomplished musician talk about, like, how they missed the end of the song.
Yeah.
Because you can hear in his voice, he's, like, really upset about it. And this is coming from the perspective of someone who loves this song.
Right.
He was so excited when I threw him this pick.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's about your same age. Like, he's obsessed with this song.
And zero people would notice some of the things he's talking about, but you, like, right now the ending of the song is this complete sloppy mess of a disaster.
But it's so interesting. I had not thought, obviously now it's so obvious. They, of course, they wanted this to sound kind of
drunk and reckless.
Yeah, like that was the vibe they were going for.
Right.
To me, as someone who didn't grow up with this, I'm like, why the fuck would you ever want this? But in a way it's like, yeah, I get why they did it in punk. I guess I just wasn't applying the same, yeah, that, like, organic feel of, like, yeah, you're in the room with them. Hear them clicking their pedals. It's all in.
Yeah.
It's all one.
Because they're like, melody, craft, and so forth. They sound kind of like a big star. Like, their influence was, like, you know, like, old kind of jangle pop and R.E.M. and stuff more recently. But I feel like they thought, we've got to give it this punky energy and, like, this kind of ramshackle quality, like the Replacements or whoever, to make it sound more what a rapper would call street or legit, mm-hmm. you know, like they...
Like, give them some credibility.
More punk credibility, mm-hmm. I guess. Even though no one in the world thinks of the Gin Blossoms as punk, if you go too far in the other direction, like Train, then you're like your mom's Y98 FM driving to Jazzercise playlist or whatever. So they tried to keep it, you know, a little more edgy. And, you know, you hear it now, it sounds very innocuous. But to me, that's how we started this thing. At age 12, I was like, oh, this is punk music. And I was listening to the Gin Blossoms.
So then, oh, God, how in the fuck do I punch this up? I mean, there's so many directions to go with this.
Well, I hope you make it happier.
Yeah, I could rewrite it to be happy. I mean, if that's the thesis, is that, like, the verses bum us the fuck out.
Right.
Just make it positive.
Like, about how jealousy is a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And maybe, I mean, I don't know. We'll see. I'm on the fence.
How it can make a person feel needed and loved.
Right. So my therapist,
if you're
will
in a real sick
this.
Relationship. Yeah, exactly.
So I'll write a pro-toxicity relationship song.
Yes.
Perfect. And then maybe musically, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what I do with it musically. Okay. I think I have a good idea here.
Okay.
With that said, well, actually, no. Now we have to listen to it. Of course, it's not done yet, but, you know, yes. Pretend.
In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And now for world premiere.
Hey, Jealousy, except it's happier. It's pro-jealousy in a toxic love anthem, and I figured out what song it reminds me of, and now the music is that song instead.
Tell me if you got nothing to hide. Let me look through your phone tonight. I just wanna read your emails, texts, DMs, the password to your LinkedIn. And you know it might not be that bad to cut contact with your dad. I don't like the way he calls and talks with you. Plus you have me now. Tomorrow we can burn down this whole town. I'm just kidding, unless you're down. We'd have much more fun without your friends around. Hey, jealousy. Hey, jealousy. Hey, jealousy. Hey, jealousy. Can I trust you not to think and not to sleep around? 'Cause if you were really in love with me, you'd let me see your bank account. 'Cause all I really want's to be with you. You don't want the same thing too. Talking about your career like I'm not here. What's a job got that I don't? Tomorrow we can drive around this town. I mean, I'll drive, you just sit down. Call your dad, tell him that you are estranged now. Hey, jealousy. Hey, jealousy. He's jealous of me. Hey, jealousy.
Wow.
That was awesome.
So, so different.
Yes.
So different than the Gin Blossoms.
How much time do you spend on these generally? What's the longest you've ever spent on one?
I'm hesitant to say. It's so long. It's so long.
Which one was it?
Probably the Michael McDonald, the Doobie Brothers, What a Fool Believes.
Did you do the impression?
I did, and then I did an a cappella arrangement.
Okay.
But actually, that might not be true, because the Misery Business one, I not only had to do a really difficult vocal performance,
yeah,
but I also had to watch the movie Misery and write a whole plot synopsis that rhymed and fit the line length. So that took like literally like 5 days.
Okay.
Oh, with that said, let's get to Unpunchable Jams.
Yes.
You can't punch this.
Patricio Walshikens.
Well.
Your birth name.
This kind of thing, I have OCD, which I keep under control.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But like that kind of thing, like bring a song that you love is the kind of, like even
spiral,
even choosing Hey Jealousy. I was like, I'm just going to do it and be done with it. And then all week I've been like, did I pick one I have enough to say?
I made a mistake.
Right. Because what I wanted to do was pick one where I have like a funny quip for every line. But of course, I was like, you want to do something you're passionate about.
And I also think that I'm tired of people being funny. I'm ready for authenticity.
I'm glad. I hope I brought that.
Are you kidding? The roller skating image is one of my favorite things I've heard this year.
You know what I really loved from my buddy Gabrus we were talking about was that he, when he won that contest, he wanted to sing Kokomo for his class. That seemed so much like something I would do, and it made me kind of sad but happy. And yes,
no, your roller skating story is exactly in that same league as that Gabriel story.
Well, please,
thank you.
So here's my song. The reason how I narrowed it down for myself to make it easier on myself was like, what is the modern day Hey Jealousy?
I love this.
But this is a song that I very much love right now, and it is a female take on the exact same material: a woman wanting to get back with her ex. She is a huge drunk, and the second verse of this song goes so much darker than Hey Jealousy.
Oh, no.
The song is called Drunk 2, like the number 2, and the band is called Mannequin Pussy.
I've been going on almost every night. I've been drinking everything I can get in. Who my hands on, I pretend.
It is such a great rock song, and I recommend it highly. It's the modern Hey Jones.
Okay. I'm intrigued based on nothing but the band name.
The name is a hard sell to a lot of people.
No, I'm in it more because of it. I'm instantly visualizing. Wait, what is it? They don't have... What?
Yeah, exactly.
A perfect paradox.
It also contains the line, which would fit right into Hey Jealousy, I still love you, you stupid fuck. Which is a good line.
Yeah, that's a little too close to home for my taste. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, that's a good line. That's a good line, and I can't relate to it. For my Unpunchable Jam, I'm just going to go off of what I've actually been listening to recently with no relation to this song.
Okay.
I'm sure I could find one. This song I'm choosing because it is... no, I have nothing. It is No More I Love You by Annie Lennox.
No more I love you.
Annie Lennox is cool.
I love her. I am so inspired by her. I think it's really cool she's had the career she has, especially at the time she had it. Yeah. Unheard of.
That was a joke for my bachelor party, actually. I sent out, you know, you do these like 10-person emails to people. So I was like, the emails are always like to get everybody pumped for the bachelor party. So
all right, fuckos.
Right. So I did that, and it was building to the final joke, which was that I had booked, acclaimed British songstress Annie Lennox to perform a 3-hour acoustic performance in the hotel room.
I would have loved that, though. I would have been so sad when it didn't happen.
I got an okay response from the group. But
oh, that
would have
killed with me. You should have invited me to
your bachelor
party.
I think people thought I was serious. Yeah.
Patrick, thank you so much for coming on the pod.
Thank you for having me. This is great.
It was such a dream. What do you want to promote? What should people check out?
Well, you know, I have this podcast, We'll See You in Hell. There's tons of free ones on iTunes, but now we're Patreon only. We do a movie each week and just kind of joke around, talk, laugh, have fun, talk movies. And that's it. That's all I got.
Any shows you want to promote?
I got nothing out. You know, I'm also doing, you know, Bridger Winiger.
Yeah.
He is.
I've never heard his last name said out loud. So I was like,
I've heard
Winder
and Winiger. I've been friends with him forever and he doesn't really tell me which one it is, but, he has a new podcast coming out called I Said No Gifts.
I love that.
And I just did that, but that's all I got. You know,
great.
I love this podcast.
Where can people follow you online? Also, I'm sorry, I was focused on what I was going to say. Thank you.
No, so I nice really do. And I hadn't heard it, but when you asked me to do it, I listened to a bunch, and it's just great.
Thank you so much.
It really
much.
Is. It's so entertaining. What did you ask me to say?
Your, like, handles.
I'm sorry. The Patrick Walsh at Twitter and Instagram. I rarely do either anymore, but that's where I am.
Oh, what, you work? You have real work? Okay, fine.
No,
fuck.
I just got sick of it, for God's sake.
Yeah,
the
I would love to be able to act on being sick of it, but unfortunately, I'm what they call up and coming. Thank you.
Yes, you are.
Well, thank you for doing the show. If you want to check me out, I'm at Meow and Meow Monster. The show's at Punch Up the Jam. We'll post a sweet little pic. You can see Patrick in all his white claws. You're definitely posing with the white claws.
Oh, all right. I'll do that.
I'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, that was
Punch
the Jam.
Punch
the Jam.
Hey.
Punch the Jam.
Punch
the Jam.
That was a HeadGum podcast.